Russia scores a membership to the World Trade Organization.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Jeremy Hobson. After nearly two decades of negotiations, Russia is now officially a member of the World Trade Organization. It's an economic boon for Russia. Its estimated foreign tariffs cost the country's exporters as much as $2 billion a year. It's also an economic boon for most of the WTO's members, but not the U.S. That's because of a 1974 amendment passed by Congress to punish the Soviet Union for preventing Jews from emigrating. Peter Van Dyke has that story for us from Moscow.
Joining the WTO means Russia will lower import tariffs and open up to more foreign competition. But the Jackson-Vanik Amendment means new rules won't apply to U.S. companies.
If we don't repeal Jackson-Vanik, it's as if, for the United States, Russia never joined the WTO.
Bill Watson is a trade policy analyst at the Cato Institute in Washington. He says Congress can't think beyond the November elections, and it doesn't want to be seen to be giving Russia an easy ride on issues like human rights and corruption.
They ought to be looking at this whole issue as a jobs bill, something to do to create economic opportunity to open Russian markets to U.S. products.
Watson says the U.S. wins more than Russia from its entry into the WTO. But the Jackson-Vanik Act means other WTO members get a head start. That's why U.S. companies doing business here have long lobbied to get rid of the amendment. In fact, right now, it's about their biggest job. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
Global markets are sagging this morning. In Europe, London's FTSE is down nearly 1%. Asian markets got hammered as well. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index lost 1%. Mining giant BHP Billiton is putting a bunch of big projects on ice after its profits fell for the first time in 3 years. That's partly because slowing growth in China has dampened demand for commodities like copper. U.S. markets lost ground yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.5% to close at 13,203. Tomorrow, in a New York City courtroom, a bankruptcy judge will decide if another couple billion dollars can be given back to victims of Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. The question, who gets how much and when? Sabri Benashour reports.
It's estimated Madoff victims lost about $20 billion. So far, $1.1 billion has been returned. Why?
Because of the number of people involved here, this is a massive undertaking, and it's a long, drawn-out, painful process.
That's white-collar criminal defense attorney Brad Simon. Basically, hundreds of victims continue to elbow each other over how much they should get. And here's the latest fight. If you invested with Madoff, say, 5 years ago, should you get interest? Anthony Sabino, professor of law at St. John's College, says,
I have tremendous compassion for the victims here, but in all frankness, they're barking up the wrong tree.
He says the law is pretty clear. Victims almost never get interest on their losses. Plus, Sabino says paying out interest to earlier victims would draw down the pot of money for more recent victims. Tomorrow, the judge will decide if money should be set aside for interest or paid out now to everyone who got ripped off. I'm Sabri Benashour for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From late night feedings to the teenage years, there's no question having children comes with some emotional costs. But what about cold hard cash? We take a look at that today in Money Matters, our regular segment exploring how the news of the day impacts our pocketbooks. Marketplace Money's Adrienne Hill joins me now, and she has something of a personal interest in this topic. Her first child is due later this year. Good morning, Adrienne.
Good morning, Stacey.
So let's get down to brass tacks. In fact, this should be very pertinent for you.
It is.
How much does raising a kid cost?
Well, on average, the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates a middle-income family with two parents will spend about $250,000 from age 0 to age 18.
Wow, that sounds like a lot.
It is. It's a big number, but the cost actually completely depends. And here's Mark Leno, who wrote the government report.
Costs vary by household income. The more income you have, the more you spend on a child.
The cost also depends on where in the country you live. Urban areas in the Northeast are most expensive, and how many other kids you have.
So the second kid is cheaper than the first, the third is cheaper than the second?
Exactly right.
So what makes kids so costly? I mean, it's not like the parents are buying infinite stuffed animals or PlayStations, I imagine.
It'd be fun. Toys are not the top expenditures. Housing costs make up a big chunk of the cost of a kid, which is about a third of the cost of a kid. You need a place to put them and let them sleep. You've also got to pay for childcare, food, transportation, healthcare, and you got to keep them clothed.
I guess so. I guess that depends on where you live. But Adrian, are some ages more expensive than others for kids?
You might think babies would cost the most, and I kind of expected that they were. Turns out I was wrong, and here's Lino again.
Teenagers are the most expensive. They have high transportation costs. These are the years when they start to drive, so you add them onto your auto insurance. And they also have high food costs.
Not to mention the emotional cost, I imagine.
All those Kleenexes, girls.
Exactly. But do these numbers include college?
They don't, which if you have a college-bound kid that you're hoping to help out, can raise these numbers dramatically. The study also doesn't include any other costs after 18, which as a lot of parents will tell you is not when the bills stop coming in.
Our own Adrian Hill. Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Stacey.
And finally, which cities are the most honest? The beverage company Honest Tea decided to find out. It set up unmanned kiosks around the country that offered drinks on the honor system. People were supposed to deposit a dollar when they took a bottled tea. The two most honest cities on the list, Oakland, California, and Salt Lake City, Utah. Boulder, Colorado, San Francisco, and Boston also ranked high. The lowest rankings went to Venice Beach, California, and Brooklyn, New York, where only 61% of people paid for their drinks. Overall, though, Honest Tea concluded that Americans are 93% honest, which is pretty good. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.